Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, The Remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. Sudanese Minister of Information says security forces have arrested officers involved in a failed coup attempt.
The situation is now under full control after the arrest of the military and civilian leaders of the failed coup attempt, who were captured in a Shejara military base in Khartoum, and they are now under investigation.
And peace monitors in South Sudan say the situation in parts of Western Equatorial State could affect the implementation of the country's 2018 peace agreement.
RGMX strongly believes that there is an imminent risk that further escalation will endanger vulnerable population.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Sudan say some military officers and civilians who attempted to topple the transitional government are supporters of the ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Sudan's Information Minister Hamza Balul says security forces are interrogating the military officers arrested in connection with the failed coup attempt. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking on the state-owned television station, Sudan's information minister and government spokesperson Hamza Balul confirmed security forces arrested a number of top military officers and political leaders in Khartoum today that are believed to have orchestrated the failed coup attempt. He said all of the detained individuals are supporters of former President Omar al-Bashir and are being interrogated. Balul assured Sudanese citizens conditions are safe in the capital.
The situation is now under full control after the arrest of the military and civilian leaders of the failed coup attempt, who were captured in a Shejara military base in Khartoum, and they are now under investigation. The concerned authorities are on the search for the remaining individuals from the supporters of the former administration who participated in the failed coup attempt.
The information minister says all members of the transitional government, including the military, civilians, and the former armed opposition groups, are working in coordination to ensure that the situation in Sudan remains stable. He accused elements from the previous regime of trying to distract the transitional period in Sudan and cause havoc in the country. Balul says the government will continue to defend and protect the revolution through the support of its citizens and will not allow anyone to, in his word, spoil this journey.
We call upon the revolutionary forces, resistance committees, political and civilian forces, peace parties, professional bodies and unions, and all sectors of the Sudanese society to be vigilant and attentive to the continuous attempts which are aimed at aborting the December revolution.
Balul assured the Sudanese people that the transitional government is committed to implementing all of the reforms enshrined in the Juba peace deal. He said the interests of the Sudanese people will always remain the government's first priority.
We in the civilian government institutions assure you that we will not let go to waste the gains of the Sudanese people. Our people will be on the front lines to defend and protect the transition from the dark forces that are trying to steal the revolution of our people.
The main bridge linking Khartoum town to Omdurman has been blocked and heavy military deployment can be seen around the premises of the state-owned radio and television station in Omdurman. While some Sudanese citizens in Khartoum appear to be panicked by the failed coup attempt, most businesses and shopping centers remain open throughout the day. For VOA News, I'm Michael Latit in Khartoum.
South Sudan peace monitors say the implementation of the country's 2018 revitalized peace agreement could face challenges due to insecurity in parts of Western Equatorial State. The United Nations mission in South Sudan and envoys from several countries issued a joint statement last week after visiting Tombora County. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
The visit by the regional and international envoys to Tambara follows recent fighting in the area, which killed dozens of people, displaced thousands of others, and destroyed property. Stephen Ameyu, the Archbishop of the Juba Catholic Archdiocese, says the fighting in Tambara is between two communities in the area. Berhenu Kebede is Chief of Staff of the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or RJMEC, the body tasked with overseeing the implementation of the 2018 peace deal. He says South Sudan's regional and international partners believe the revitalized government of national unity must take urgent action to end the fighting.
RJMEC strongly believes that there is an imminent risk that further escalation will endanger vulnerable population and exacerbate the dire humanitarian situation and threaten the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement.
The delegation that visited Tambara last week was led by Nicholas Haysom, the special representative of the UN Secretary General. The team included IGAD representatives, the UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, and diplomats from Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Norway, Sudan, and Uganda. The visit was aimed at encouraging the warring parties to peacefully resolve the conflict. According to a joint letter issued by the delegation, the conflict has led to the killing of civilians, the displacement of more than 80,000 people, and the destruction of private and public property, as well as the suspension of humanitarian operations in the area. 2 weeks ago, UNMISS released a statement calling on the government to take swift action to address the growing conflict in Tambara. The continued fighting has increased the demand for humanitarian assistance at a time when resources are already stretched thin, according to UNMISS. Kebede is urging state and national authorities to intervene.
RJMEC calls on the national and state governments to take immediate steps towards the separation of forces and undertake dialogue and reconciliation initiatives between communities to de-escalate tension and appeal for local authorities and community leaders to ensure the safety and security of humanitarian workers so that life-saving assistance can resume in earnest without any hiccups.
The fighting in Tambara started about 4 months ago but has escalated in the past 2 months. In August, President Salva Kiir dispatched Western Equatorial state leaders to Tambara County in efforts to quell the fighting to no avail. The officials have not named the parties involved in the fighting but called on the unity government to quickly separate and relocate the fighting forces in the area. They also called on the national government to quickly complete its investigations into the conflict. Kebede is calling on the parties to the peace deal to speed up implementation of security arrangements as part of the solution to ending the conflict in Tambara.
From the engagement of the joint delegation with the local stakeholders, it became clear that the root cause of the conflict can be best addressed through the full implementation of the peace agreement, especially the transitional security arrangements and notably the unification of forces and their immediate redeployment.
In her speech during the inauguration of the National Legislature late last month, National Legislative Assembly Speaker Jemanu Nkumba said at least 43 people were killed in the conflict, including women and children, and nearly 400 homes were burned. She described the situation as unprecedented and called for quick intervention from the national government. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udu in Juba.
September 21st is the International Day for Peace, and some South Sudanese analysts in the capital Juba say the country is yet to realize lasting peace due to lack of rule of law. A professor of politics, peace and security studies at the University of Juba says leaders of the former warring parties should work together to implement key chapters of the country's 2018 revitalized peace agreement and open up civic space to the public to engage in issues affecting the country. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Abraham Kolnyon, an associate professor of politics, Peace and Security at the University of Juba says despite the signing of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, South Sudan is far from being peaceful, as one can still hear the sound of gunshots almost everywhere. Nguyen says according to the Human Development Index, lasting peace includes improved food security, health status, a good education system, and the rule of law. He says those markers are not evident in South Sudan.
In institutions of South Sudan are weakened. There is no proper procedure in following the law where people are supposed to be held accountable for what they have done. And as a result of this, if you put all these things together, you could see into it that the context in which people of South Sudan should enjoy peace is a nightmare.
Nguyen says signatories to the Revitalized Peace Agreement may have tried their best to make the ceasefire hold, but the leaders must push harder to get things done.
They need to go an extra mile by trying to cooperate day and night to make sure that this current peace agreement is implemented by working on the key reform agenda that had been stipulated in the peace agreement. And as a result of this, they need to make sure that the people of South Sudan are given freedom of expression. That means there is civic space that need to be open. Secondly, they need also to make sure institutions, laws and norms are respected.
Nguyen says the government should provide basic services to its citizens, pay soldiers and civil servants on time, and provide security so that people can move about freely and farm their land. Jacob Chol, another professor of political science at the University of Juba, describes the situation in South Sudan as negative peace, saying South Sudan's leaders are more divided than they are united. Chol says the way things stand, the peace deal was only meant to achieve power sharing among the warring parties rather than bring about meaningful development and stability in the country.
Elites realize that when they form faction or when they rebel against the government or disagree with the government, they realize that they will always be given opportunity for them to get more positions, more power, more resources in terms of incentives and in terms of making them happy to come back and sit in Juba. So the issue of rewarding, a lot of rewards being given to the elites when they disagree with the government or when they kill the citizens. So that has been one of the obstacles why we don't have total peace in South Sudan.
Chol says rather than focusing on their differences based on factions and ethnicity, South Sudan's leaders should work side by side to restore peace.
There is a great need for the leaders in the country to accept each other and to agree that peace is critical, not for themselves, but for the South Sudanese that they are leading. So if that thinking or that tone come from the leadership, especially the parties that are in the agreement, then we can really see a change in trend in the way of the South Sudanese leaders look at the peace process. So if they agree on that, then we can really see something permanent coming to South Sudan.
Instead of relying on external support to restore peace in their country, Chol says South Sudan's leaders should learn from Rwanda and promote homegrown solutions to their problems to ensure lasting peace. Juan Marina, Executive Director for Defy Hate Now, an initiative that works to build trust among peace stakeholders, says South Sudan has attained partial peace compared to 2013 and 2016 when war broke out. She says several layers of the conflict still need to be worked out by the country's leaders with a focus on reconciliation and healing.
Diligence and commitment across all levels of peace building and also across all the stakeholders of peace. So all these stakeholders need to put continuous effort to work towards healing and recovery from the past wounds of conflict. So once that is done, I think we will be ready for the next phase of life in a peaceful South Sudan.
Chol says South Sudanese should stop believing that they can only make a living when they enter politics. He calls on officials to promote local government instead of promoting politics, where young people believe that if they don't get constitutional posts, then they cannot support the peace process. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, How is Africa doing during the COVID-19 pandemic? That story is coming up right after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
does your family often get together to celebrate holidays?
My family is low income and they don't have much for holidays because it requires a lot of money, maybe a lot of traveling.
It is occasional, actually. Maybe end of year or these other celebrations like for different religions like Christmas, Eid. Those are some of the occasions we normally come together as a family.
For me, my family, well, they are not together. They are all scattered in different countries, so getting together is a bit difficult.
Family often get together to celebrate, not even on holidays, but ordinary days, especially on Sundays.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at efforts by African governments to ensure their populations are protected against COVID-19 pandemic. The World Health Organization is warning that COVID-19 vaccine export bans by wealthy countries will prolong the pandemic in Africa, preventing recovery from the disease in the rest of the world. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
While more than 60% of the U.S., European Union, and British populations have been vaccinated, only 2% of COVID vaccine shots have been given in Africa. The COVAX facility has slashed its planned COVID-19 vaccine deliveries to Africa by 25% this year. World Health Organization Africa Regional Director Machidiso Moeti says the 470 million doses now expected to arrive by the end of September are enough to vaccinate just 17% of Africans on the continent.
Export bans and vaccine hoarding still have a chokehold on the lifeline of vaccine supplies to Africa. Even if all planned shipments via COVAX and the African Union arrive, Africa still needs almost 500 million more doses to reach the year-end goal. At this rate, the continent may only reach the 40% target by the end of March next year.
WHO reports more than 8 million cases of COVID-19 in Africa, including more than 200,000 deaths. 44 African countries have reported the Alpha variant, and 32 countries have reported the more virulent and contagious Delta variant. Moeti warns of further waves of infection and loss of life in this pandemic. Given the short supply of vaccines, she urges strict adherence to preventive measures such as mask wearing and social distancing. She reiterates WHO's call for a halt to booster shots in wealthy nations, except for those with compromised immune systems and at risk of severe illness and death.
I've said many times that it's in everyone's interest to make sure the most at-risk groups in every country are protected. As it stands, the huge gaps in vaccine equity is not closing anywhere near fast enough. The quickest way to end this pandemic is for countries with reserves to release their doses so that other countries can buy them.
Moeti says African countries with low vaccination rates are breeding grounds for vaccine-resistant variants. She warns this could end up sending the world back to square one. She says the pandemic will continue to ravage communities worldwide if vaccine inequity continues. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Kenya, where donkey owners are demanding a permanent ban on the slaughter of the animals after a court lifted a temporary ban earlier this year. They say their donkey are being stolen and killed to meet a demand for beauty products and traditional medicine in China. For VOA News, Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
Kinampet Sampare is taking stock of his remaining herd of donkeys, making sure none have been taken. He says he did not worry about losing his animals a year ago during a government order that shut down donkey slaughterhouses. But since July, six of his donkeys have disappeared from his land. Sampare is convinced it's because the temporary ban on donkey slaughter was lifted in May, allowing the meat and hides to be sold again to Asian markets.
Hiyo factory ilifungwa, wizi wa punda.
He says when the donkey factory was closed, the theft had stopped. It had stopped because since then, no donkey was lost until recently when six of my donkeys were stolen and my neighbor's two donkeys. Tens of thousands donkey owners like Sampare are demanding a fresh and permanent ban on donkey slaughter in Kenya. In a petition, some 30,000 owners from 28 counties said their animals are vulnerable to theft from poachers. They say once stolen, the donkeys are being slaughtered for use in beauty products and so-called medicine sold in China. Animal rights groups are calling for a regional ban on donkey slaughter. Josiah Ojuang is the program manager of one of such groups, the Animal Welfare Africa Network.
We also had a chance as ANAO and as members of the Association of Donkey Welfare Organizations in Kenya this year to discuss with members of IALA, the East Africa Legislative Assembly, the need to have this removed not just from Kenyan laws, but all over East Africa. Because the moment you allow donkey slaughter in Tanzania and you stop it in Kenya, the donkeys will move across the border and come.
Kenyan authorities have appealed a court ruling in May that lifted the previous ban. That decision is due in October. In the meantime, the principal secretary at the State Department of Livestock, Harry Kimtai, told VOA that Kenya is not allowing the donkey slaughterhouses to operate without a valid purpose, such as disposing of donkeys that have naturally died.
Yes, it has been lifted by the court. But in terms of administrative, we feel that we cannot just go by what the court has said. We said we have no problem. We have not stopped them from slaughtering, but we are saying our inspectors will not inspect. And until you show us evidence that you are in the production systems of donkeys and therefore there is need for you to slaughter.
National figures show in 2019 there were an estimated of 1.7 million donkeys in Kenya. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Cameroon, where more than 850 former Boko Haram fighters and their family members who escaped from the jihadist group to Cameroon have left northern Cameroon for Nigeria. Nigerian authorities say they are taking the former militants to disarmament centers. This after complaints that such centers in Cameroon were overwhelmed by a number of former jihadists defecting since the terrorist group's leader was declared killed. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinsika reports from Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Hundreds of people Saturday gathered along streets, watching and waving as 20 buses transporting former Boko Haram militants and their families left Mora, a town on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, for Banki, a town in Nigeria's Borno State. The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Mijiyawa Bakari, says the former militants agreed to voluntarily return to Nigeria.
Ici, il s'agit des repentis, c'est-à-dire ceux-là même qui ont été prisonniers de Boko Haram.
Bakari says the ex-Boko Haram militants who have agreed to return to Nigeria's Borno State are Nigerian citizens, 854 of them, which also include their families. He says they told Cameroonian government officials that they were either fighters or slaves on plantations controlled by the jihadist group. Bakari says the Nigerian ex-fighters promised to be good citizens of Borno State. Bakari said about 150 more former militants who are of Nigerian nationality will return to their country in the weeks ahead, but he did not explain why they are not returning now. A majority of the ex-militants are women and children. Cameroon said more about 320 males, including young boys among them, are former fighters of the jihadist group. 80 are females, the terrorist group used as spies in localities they attacked, authorities said. 454 others are their family members. 34-year-old Kadir Hassan says he is spokesperson of the former Boko Haram militants who agreed to return to Nigeria. He escaped from the Sambisa forest, a Boko Haram stronghold, on the Cameroon-Nigerian border in August. The former fighter says he is looking forward to meeting his relatives in Kukawa, a town in Nigeria's Borno State. Hassan says he left Kukawa to join the jihadist group in March 2020. Hassan says many Cameroonians and Nigerians he saw in the Sambisa forest want to leave Boko Haram, but are afraid that fighters will kill them. He says he is pleading with the multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin that is fighting the jihadist group to help people who are still under Boko Haram captivity and want to leave. He says the ex-combatants pledge to contribute to the development of their communities when they return to Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the right to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Beledi by Mawa. We have been listening to Mawa and the song Beledi. I am John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh.
Congo, Derubazi, Uganda, Shilu Arua, U Kenya, Shilu Nadapal, Ubagi Alfa Dulude, Ae Barakesimu, Uyala, Sibu Sudan, Deru Shilu Abiele.